Brunn woke with a feeling of choking, then realized a wad of cloth was tied in her mouth. A gag, like something out of an ancient story. Ridiculous. She blinked and glared up at the men standing over her. They were in pea suits, helmets dangling in back. Her body still felt heavy and limp, but she could just move her legs when she tried. She tried to struggle, but the drug made it impossible. They dragged her upright, then out through the twisting hatch into the main passage of the yacht, over the bodies of her guardsmen, through the tube they'd rigged between the yacht and their ship, whatever it was. They pushed her into a seat and strapped her in, then walked off. Brunn wiggled as much as she could. Her arms, then her legs, began to itch and then tingle. So the drug was wearing off. But she didn't see how she could get away. Yet.
Your first duty is to stay alive.
Several more men came through the tube. Was that all? Or had some stayed aboard the yacht? And if so, why? She felt her ears throb as they shut the exterior lock, then the interior lock. They must have cast off the yacht. Someone would find it. Someday. If another Boros ship came this way, if another Boros ship even noticed a minor bit of space debris. The ship she was on shuddered uneasily. Jump, then steadied again. Three of the men were still back by the airlock. Now they went to work. Brunn craned her head, trying to see. Her ears popped again. The men moved on into the airlock and undogged the outer hatch. Colder air gushed in, chilling her ankles. The ones who'd originally brought her aboard reappeared, now in some sort of tan uniform instead of pea suits, unstrapped her and hauled her upright. If she could break loose, well, they thought she was still weakened, but three more appeared at the airlock. Too many, her mind decided, even as her body tried to twist. Too much drug, she realized, as her muscles refused to give her the speed she was used to. Well, if she couldn't fight, she could at least observe. Tan uniforms, snug-fitted shirts over slightly looser slacks, over boots. Brown leather boots, she noticed when she looked down. On the collar, insignia of a five-pointed star in a circle. Once she was through the airlock, she saw the Boros Consortium logo on the bulkhead. So she must be on the Elias Madero. The men hustled her down the passage, wide enough for a small robot loader, past hatches with symbols and labels she felt she should recognize, past a galley, past a gymnasium, to the bridge. But the man who stood in the center of the bridge was no merchant captain. He had to be the commander. He wore the same uniform as the others, but the star in circle insignia on his collar was larger, and gold instead of silver. She met his gaze with all the defiance she could muster. He looked past her to her escort.
Got the papers?
One of the other men came forward with her ID packet.
Yep, she's one all right. We checked her retinal scans and everything.
You done good, boys.
The commander glanced at her papers, then at her.
Not a single shred of decency, but what can you expect of that sort?
Brunn struggled to spit out the gag. She knew exactly what she wanted to say to this person. Commander came closer.
You're that so-called speaker's daughter. You're used to having your own way, just like your daddy. Well, all things come to an end. You probably think your daddy'll get you out of this like he's gotten you out of all your other scrapes. You may think he's going to send that regular space service to rescue you, but it ain't going to happen that way. We don't want your daddy's money. We aren't scared of your daddy's power. They won't find you. No one's going to find you. You're ours now.
He grinned past her.
Your daddy and that council of families, they think they got a right to make the laws for everybody, but they don't. They think they got a right to set fees and taxes on everybody that comes through their so-called territory, but they don't. Free men don't have to pay any mind to what perverts and women say. That's not the way God made the universe. We're free men, we are, and our laws come from the word of God as set forth by the prophets.
They will destroy you. You can't do this. You won't get away with it. And they will come after me and blow you to bits.
He reached out to her face, and when she turned away, he grabbed her ears with both hands and forced her to face him.
Now your daddy may try, or maybe because he'll know we've got you, he'll have the good sense to let us alone if he doesn't want to see his little girl in pieces. But he's not going to get you back. No one is. Your life just changed forever. you're going to obey like the prophet said women should, and the sooner you start, the easier it'll be on you.
Never.
Brynn threw that at him with her eyes, with every fiber of her body. Maybe she couldn't do anything now, but now was not forever. She would get free, because she always did come out on top. She was lucky. She had abilities they didn't know about. But the fear edged closer.
Someday your luck will run out.
Someday you'll be helpless.
Someday you'll be stuck.
And what will you do then?
The words she had thrown at them sounded thin now, faced with these men. But she had meant them. She would not give up. She would not give in. She was Brynhilde Charlotte, named for queens and warriors. He moved his hands down the sides of her head to her neck.
You don't believe me yet. That's fine. Doesn't matter.
He slid his hands out her shoulders, then curled his fingers into the neck of her jumpsuit. Brynn would have curled her lip if she could. Here it came, the predictable move of a story cube male captor. He was going to rip her clothes off. He would be surprised when he tried. She hadn't spent all that money for custom-tailored protective ship suits for nothing. But he didn't try to rip the suit, just ran his fingers inside the neck, feeling the cloth.
We'll need the slicer, boys.
Well, hackneyed but smarter than dirt, maybe.
The knife the other man handed him was large enough to gut an elephant, Brynn thought. He wanted her to be impressed with it. Some men always thought bigger was better, but she had seen knives that big before.
Now, the first thing...
The man slid the tip of the long blade into the neck of her suit.
Women don't wear men's clothes.
Brynn didn't see how anyone could mistake a custom outfit designed for her body as a man's outfit. With those darts, it wouldn't have fitted any male she'd ever seen.
Women who wear men's clothes are usurping men's authority. We don't put up with that.
He made a single rapid slice downward, and the ship suit opened from neck to crotch. He could just as well have pulled the tab, but he had to make a dramatic thing out of it, ruining an expensive ship suit.
Women are not allowed to wear trousers.
What do pants have to do with it?
Everyone wore pants if they were doing the kind of work in which pants were more comfortable. But this was probably just an excuse to cut her clothes off. He inserted the tip of the knife into the lower end of the opening and sliced open the leg of the ship suit, then the other leg. Brynn stared ahead. They would want her to react. She wouldn't react.
Women are not allowed to wear men's shoes.
At a nod from the commander, two men grabbed her legs and pulled off her boots.
Stupid, stupid, stupid.
Custom-made boots, her boots. And she was a woman, and therefore those were women's boots, not men's boots. Then they dropped her legs. Her bare feet thudded on the cold deck. Next, the commander gestured, and someone behind her pulled the ripped sides of her ship suit behind her. This she'd expected. Her chin lifted.
Take a good look. You'll pay for every leer.
But the commander's frown was not a leer. He was staring at her abdomen, at the registered embryo logo with its imprinted genetic data.
Abomination. A construct.
One of the other men pulled out his own big knife, but the commander's gesture stopped him, just as Brynn was sure she would be gutted right there.
It's true that none of the faithful can tamper with God's plan for their children, but this woman is the result of tampering. What was done to her was not her responsibility.
Brynn relaxed muscles she didn't realize she'd tensed. The man leaned over, peering at the mark, then rubbed his finger over it. Brynn thought of kneeing him in the face, but there were still too many of them. She would have to wait.
I don't like it. What perversions have they bred into her?
None that'll survive our training. And she's strong, well-grown. By all reports, she carries genes for intelligence and good health. It'd be a waste not to make use of them.
But
she will be no threat to us.
He looked Brynn full in the face.
You are thinking still that you will be rescued, that you can go back to your abominations and perversions. You do not yet believe that your old life is over, but you will soon. You have already spoken the last words you will ever speak.
What does that mean? Are they going to kill me after all?
Brynn stared back, defiant.
You will be used as you deserve. And as a mute breeder, you will be no threat, no matter what.
Brynn felt a shock as her mind caught up with that.
I see you understand that much at least. You're not used to that, not being able to plead and beg and wheedle your way around your weakling father or the other men you've whored with. But that's over. The voice of the heathen will be heard no more. Yea, the tongues of those who know not God will be silenced. And as the holy words also say, women shall keep silence before men in respect and submission. You were born in sin and abomination, but you will live in the service of God Almighty. When it is time, when we choose, you will sleep. And when you awake, you will have no voice.
Her body jerked in spite of herself. She struggled, as she had not struggled before, knowing it was useless. Brunn fought herself to stillness, hating the tears that stung her eyes, that ran down her face.
We'll put you away now to think about that. I want you to know ahead of time, to understand. For this is part of the training you will receive, to learn that you have no power, and no man will listen to you. You are silenced, slut, as women should be silent.
It could not be happening. Not to her. Not to the daughter of the Speaker of the Grand Council. Things like this happened, if they happened, in dull history books, in times long past, or places far away. Not to her. All this, she knew to her shame, was in her eyes, was in the tears, in the shaking of her body.
Take her back. Be sure you've cuffed her. Start an IV, too, just saline for now.
For now. For however long. She believed suddenly. It was real. It was happening. The men holding her moved her firmly along, her bare feet stumbling on all the rough places where her boots had protected her. She was cold, frozen with a fear she had never understood when she saw the story cubes or read the old books in her father's library. In the compartment, four of them laid her on the bunk, ignoring her struggles, and cuffed her hands to the sides, her feet together. She tried to plead with her eyes.
Oh, loosen the gag just for a minute, please. Please.
Another one came with a little kit and turned her arm, inserting the IV needle deftly. She stared up at the bag of saline hanging from a hook overhead.
When we're ready, we'll put you to sleep. Welcome to the real world.
She hated them. She writhed with fury. But it was too late for that. She would go to sleep. It would be a dream when she woke. A bad dream, a scary dream. And she would go tell Esme about it and apologize for having laughed at Esme. She would...